This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:36 right now. You're listening to The Morning Run with Han and me, Melissa, as we take a look at US markets. Now, US stocks rallied overnight, rebounding from what analysts are now calling Wild Wednesday. The Nasdaq was up 3% following earnings reports from the likes of Microsoft and Twitter and Alphabet. Now, for some market perspective, we're joined by Vasu Menon, Vice President and Senior Investment Strategist at OCBC Bank Singapore. Good morning, Vasu. Now, we've seen some wild swings in US equities this month. What's driving this volatility, you think?
Well, you know, I think it's primarily being driven by earnings and also the state of the economy. You know, we are in the earnings season right now, and you've got hits and misses. And I think the markets are concerned. The markets are concerned that the trade war will eventually impact earnings. They're looking out for signs of whether that's coming through in this earnings season. They're looking out for guidance from CEOs. And of course, you've got rising interest rates. That's also another source of concern. And you've also had recent economic data, like, for example, the home sales data in the U.S. It came out a couple of days ago that showed home sales declining by, you know, 5.5% in September. And it's been on decline for 4 months, you know. So I think a mixture of corporate earnings, concerns about the economy, that's playing on the minds of investors and creating this volatility that you just talked about.
Hey, Vasu, here's a chicken versus egg question for you. So you mentioned the volatility on Wall Street, and then also you mentioned the somewhat disappointing home sales, right? Is it a matter of time that we'll see this sell-off in Wall Street affecting Main Street, or is it the other way around, whereby what's happening on Main Street is reflective of what's happening in the U.S. equities?
Well, you know, I think essentially it's a case of what's happening on Main Street affecting U.S. equity markets. I think investors are just worried that essentially the U.S., you know, China trade saga is going to spill over into the economy. We've had one of the longest economic expansions in the U.S. in 50 years. And there's a sense of disbelief that this can, you know, go on for much, much longer. You know, I mean, usually after 9 years, 10 years, you have an economic downturn. You've had like almost 9, 10 years of economic expansion, no signs of cooling off. And investors are just trying to pick on small little bits of numbers to see whether, you know, this is creating a downturn in the economy or maybe a significant slowdown in the economy. And of course, next year, you will not have the impact of Trump's tax cuts. You'll have tighter monetary policy. So I think what's happening as far as the economic prospects are concerned, that's one of the factors impacting the stock market and Wall Street.
Vasu, if I could just get you to drill down a little bit more. I mean, the U.S. economy is going from strength to strength. So I'm trying to understand, why is it that the housing market isn't doing great?
Well, you know, the housing market has done well in the last few years. But don't forget that interest rates are on the rise. The Federal Reserve has increased interest rates 7 to 8 times since the end of 2015. Mortgage rates have gone up as well. And I think that, to some extent, is impacting housing activity, affecting housing demand. And if you cast your mind back to a few days ago and Wall Street pulled back sharply, you know, the banking stocks were ones that were hit down quite badly. And one of the reasons why the banking stocks came down was because the view that mortgage rates are on the rise, that's going to hurt the housing market, going to hurt the mortgage business, the banks, and, you know, that affected some of the banking stocks. So I think rising interest rates is a double-edged sword. It can be good for some of the banks, but at the same time, you know, rising interest rates can also hurt the housing sector, as we've seen, not just in the U.S., but elsewhere too.
So, Vasu, given all those indicators and factors that you mentioned there, how does that feed into your outlook for U.S. corporate earnings? Because some of the consensus I've seen for 2019 is that U.S. corporate earnings growth is slated for 10 to 11% for next year. So is that figure perhaps overstated?
I think it's hard to say, but, you know, you are right. It could be overstated. We might see earnings downgrades next year. What has not been factored in sufficiently is the case that, you know, U.S.-China trade war, the impact of the U.S.-China trade war, how it's going to raise costs for U.S. companies and therefore dampen their earnings. And don't forget, next year, monetary policy is going to be tightened even further. The Federal Reserve is probably going to increase interest rates 4 times. We will not have the benefit of Trump's tax cuts. The impact of those tax cuts are going to wear off. And the general economy is slowing down, you know. So I think it's possible that the 10 to 11% you talked about may be downgraded. What's interesting is that amidst this trade war, that earnings growth number has held very steady, which means analysts have not taken down their forecast against the backdrop of the trade war. Mm. So analysts may not have factored in sufficiently you know, the impact of the trade war, and we could see that coming through in 2019.
Mm. But what's happening in the U.S.? I mean, whenever the U.S. sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold, right, Vasu? So the sell-off on Wall Street is really certainly affecting global markets. Already we've seen Asian stocks losing some $5 trillion in market cap this year. Where do you think the bottom is?
It's very difficult to pick the bottom. You know, to be frank with you, Asian markets have pulled back very sharply. The MSCI Asia and Japan, I think, is down more than 20% from the peak this year. Valuations are not, you know, very expensive at this juncture. Clearly, valuations have come down to quite attractive levels after the correction. But they could get more attractive if the market pulls back further. To me, we need to go past this earnings season. Because the markets are very focused on the earnings season. That's creating a great deal of volatility. So it's very difficult to call the bottom until we go past this earnings season. That's one factor. I think the second factor is we need to go past the midterm election to November 6th because that has an impact on the outlook for Asia. And finally, I think we need to get some clarity on the U.S.-China trade situation. Is Donald Trump going to fire the third salvo? He has already had two rounds of tariffs on China. Will he do that third round? Imposing tariffs on a further $267 billion worth of Chinese imports. That remains unclear. And until we get some clarity whether China and U.S. are going to, you know, strike a truce, it's very difficult to be, you know, positive that, you know, we've hit the bottom. We might run into more volatility until we get clarity on those three things that I've just highlighted.
Oh, okay. So, Vasu, given the sell-off in Asian equities, is there an alternative investment that that you're looking at within the region? I mean, to get through some of the hurdles that you mentioned earlier?
Well, you know, not really. I think the sell-off in Asian equities, in my view, actually create an opportunity. You're a medium-term investor. You know, valuations, like I said, after the pullback has now become more attractive. Now, if you're able to look past all this noise and, you know, negativity that we have right now at this point in time and over the next 12 months, we look out over the next 12 months, maybe even the next 18 months, and once the dust settles, you could see Asian markets providing pretty good returns. So I think Asian equities are attractive. You know, it's just that you must be able to stomach the volatility. And you have to take a medium-term view. If you don't have the stomach for the volatility, then the Asian equity market is clearly not a very attractive asset class. Other than that, I think Asian bonds, you know, yes, some of them do offer pretty good yield. And you see good take-up in some of the good names in the Asian bond space. Here in Singapore, for example, we've had Temasek issuing, you know, bonds recently and very strong take-up. So there is demand for bonds. And so Asian equities, Asian bonds, I think both are interesting asset classes, but only for investors with, I think, the risk appetite and a medium-term view.
So in order to steel themselves, in order to have that risk appetite to stomach that volatility, Vasu, that you mentioned, right? What should investors focus on? Should they go back to good old economic fundamentals? Because, you know, just yesterday we just saw South Korea's third quarter GDP. That came in below expectations. Of course, we have seen China's economic slow down here, right? So how well can Asia's economic fundamentals hold up against the tide of capital flight?
Well, you know, I think Asia's economic fundamentals are relatively resilient. I mean, we have a growth forecast of 6.4% on Asia ex-China for this year, and we see it possibly even picking up slightly to 6.5%. The cases you highlighted with regards to China and South Korea may be, to some extent, exceptional. China is deleveraging its economy. They're sitting on a mountain of debt. They're dealing with their own structural issues, and that's coming through in the slower growth numbers. That's one factor. Mm-hmm. In the case of South Korea, yes, the economic growth rate came in below forecast, but I think if you drill through the numbers, what you see is that, you know, one of the main reasons why that happened is the construction sector saw a 6.4% decline because the government in South Korea is trying to curb rising home prices, and that has affected housing activity and, you know, therefore construction demand. So, yeah, peculiar factors is why South Korea and China have come in below forecast, but that may not apply to the rest of Asia. You know, so I think Asia's economic fundamentals are actually pretty good. If you look at other metrics, like, for example, short-term external debt divided by GDP in Asia, to give you an idea of whether Asia can withstand the capital flight, you find that in most parts of Asia, it's below 100%, which means that most Asian economies have enough reserves to cover short-term capital flight. So I'm not too worried about Asia in terms of its balance sheet and its fundamentals. You've got pockets of weakness, but, you know, that aside, I think general Asia is attractive from a medium-term perspective.
Okay, Vasu, but what about Asian markets' ability to withstand potentially four more federal rate hikes next year? Well, are you concerned about that? What do you think the Fed's path means for Asia's monetary policy here?
what it means, you're right, it's something to think about, something to bear, to keep in the back of your mind, because as the Fed continues to increase interest rates next year, clearly that's going to create even more volatility in Asian markets, which is why I said earlier in the show, Asia is not a place for investors with no risk appetite. You need to have a strong stomach for risk in Asia. But as long as the rate hikes are gradual and the Fed communicates it very well, and the Fed has talked about doing a press conference with every single policy meeting next year, so they're going to communicate very well with the markets. And as long as that happens, I think it will not surprise the markets. It will not spook the markets. I think markets will get spooked when they get something that, you know, they didn't anticipate. And I think these rate hikes are well anticipated, well telegraphed. As long as they're executed gradually, I think Asia will be able to still withstand the rising interest rates. Bear in mind that interest rates are rising, I think, because the economy in the U.S. is, you know, still doing fairly well. And a strong economy in the U.S. cannot be really bad news for Asia in that respect.
Vasu, great insights as always. Vasu Menon there, Vice President and Senior Investment Strategist with OCBC Bank Singapore. Now, after this, we're going to come back and take a closer look at those major US tech companies which released their earnings overnight. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.